Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsome, and I'm here for UFC 283, which is the first UFC event that we've had in Brazil since UFC Brasilia nearly 3 years ago. And if you remember, that was the event where there was no crowd and the world was about to get put into lockdown with the pandemic and COVID. So, you know, it's good to be back in Brazil. You know, Brazil is a fighting nation, especially when you look at jiu-jitsu. Brazilian jiu-jitsu is a fundamental martial art of that country. And then also the fans and the crowd are wild. They're insane. And they've been some of the best fans that we've had in mixed martial arts for many years. So it's good to be back in Brazil. It's going to be good to have a full crowd there. And it's a pay-per-view as well. We've got two title fights, plenty of Brazilians on the card as well. So it's going to be a phenomenal event and one that I'm really looking forward to. However, just very quickly before we get into the breakdowns, as always, there is going to be a Baze AI recap from our UFC prediction software from last weekend's event at UFC Vegas 67, which will be on our YouTube channel in its own dedicated Baze AI playlist. So you can see and listen and tune in to that recap podcast at youtube.com/MMAPlay365. So let's get into the breakdowns. Let's go. We've got 15 fights to get through, so we will start firing away now. We start with the main event for the vacant UFC light heavyweight championship between Glover Teixeira and Jamahal Hill. Now, I like Jamahal Hill a lot. I think he's a sniper striker. I think he's a fighter that, for the most part, especially over the last year, 12 to 18 months, we sort of anticipated Jamahal Hill being in and around this sort of spot. But it is worth mentioning that this could be a fight or two too soon for Jamahal Hill in regards to that championship fight, because, you know, let's not forget that the only reason this fight was put together is because Dana White was so unhappy with how that fight played out between Magomed Ankalaev and Jan Blachowicz for the vacant light heavyweight championship at the beginning of December, or, you know, early mid-December. And this fight was made before both of those fighters, Ankalaev and Blachowicz, even left the cage on the night. So, you know, that tells you that it was a reaction from Dana White and the UFC that they didn't like the fight. They didn't like that it was a draw and the vacant title was still vacant. And Jamahal Hill was actually scheduled to fight Anthony Smith, which, no respect to Anthony Smith, there's a big difference between Glover Teixeira and a championship fight than fighting, heading towards that title fight against an Anthony Smith. And again, Jamahal Hill training for or preparing for one specific fighter, and now he's got, what, 4 or 5 weeks to prepare for Glover Teixeira, who's a completely different problem. So, you know, for as good as Jamahal Hill is, it could be a fight or two too soon for him. That's all I'm saying. I still definitely think there's every possibility that Jamahal Hill knocks Glover Teixeira out. Jamahal Hill, he's a southpaw striker. Doesn't look to wrestle or grapple, looks to use movement and reach and fire punches straight down the middle. And like I said, he's got that power, that deceptive power, where it doesn't look like he's got a lot of power behind the shots he's throwing. But man, when he hits, his opponents do start wobbling, dropping, and obviously getting knocked out. But like I said, I think Glover Teixeira is a different problem for Jamahal Hill than what he was preparing for with Anthony Smith. And listen, Glover Teixeira, he's just come off, yes, he lost against Jiří Procházka, but he was about 20-odd seconds away from winning that fight. And Glover Teixeira was supposed to be at this massive striking disadvantage, speed disadvantage, power disadvantage against Jiří Procházka. A Jiří Procházka, by the way, that's absolutely huge. And it was actually Glover Teixeira that nearly knocked, or was almost on the way to knocking, Jiří Procházka out on the feet late in the fight as well, when he was supposed to be tired. So it does beg the question, you know, how many types of performances like that has Glover Teixeira got left, with him being like 43 years old, but he's not showing any signs that he's done yet. And listen, maybe that Procházka fight was the final nail in the coffin in regards to damage taken, but we don't know that until we've seen it in another fight. So for me, I've just got to ask myself one question in this fight. Does Glover Teixeira get this fight down to the mat? Because I think that matters. That matters a lot. Does he get it down to the mat? Does he get knocked out before he takes Jamahal Hill down? Now, one thing that I just can't get out of my head is, like I've already mentioned, Jamahal Hill is a southpaw striker, which means that Hill's lead leg is going to be the closest to the lead arm of Glover Teixeira, and Glover Teixeira's got a very fast entry into a single leg takedown. Now, the southpaw stance of Jamahal Hill is going to make that entry a little bit easier, a little bit quicker, and make it less of an effort for Glover Teixeira. So I just anticipate Glover just being able to take Jamahal Hill down, and I think when the fight gets down to the mat, Teixeira made some mistakes against Prohaska that I've not seen him make before. I don't think he's going to make again, as it cost him the fight and his championship title. I do think that this fight gets down to the mat, and I do think Glover Teixeira is going to be levels above Jamahal Hill, a step ahead on the mat, and that's the part that I can't get out of my head. So for those reasons, I'm picking Glover Teixeira to win this fight and become the new UFC light heavyweight champion. And in the next fight, the co-main event, another championship fight, this time in the UFC flyweight division. We've got Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno 4. Yes, you heard that right. Brandon Moreno 4 at the end there. This is the fourth time both of these fighters have met, and it's fourth time consecutive as well. So the last three fights of both men have both been each other, and they've all been championship fights. The current record over those last three fights is 1-1-1 for both fighters. 1-1, lost one, and drawn one. So this has never happened before, you know, both fighters meeting each other four times. But I think during this fourth fight, we get a good idea of how this fight is going to play out. I do think fight number two was the anomaly fight, and I don't want to take anything away from Brandon Moreno, but obviously Davison Figueiredo didn't look himself inside the cage. We know that he had some issues on the scales as well, really depleted, more depleted than he's looked in the other two fights, fight one and fight three. So I think that Brandon Moreno running through Davison Figueiredo is something that obviously happened. It was great for Moreno and really put him on the map as a dangerous fighter in the division and one of the best in the world. But how many times that happens if these guys keep fighting up to 10 times? I'm not sure he runs through Figueiredo like that again. I think the two fights that are more of a true reflection of how these fights play out, should these guys just keep fighting each other, is fight one and it is fight three. Now, in fight one and fight three, I think Davison Figueiredo has proved that he does have the edge in this particular type of fight and against Brandon Moreno as an opponent. I know fight one was a draw, but if it wasn't for the low blow and the point deduction, Davison Figueiredo would have won that fight unanimously. That's a fact, you know, from the scorecards that were about to be submitted, minus obviously the point deduction. But then in fight three, Brandon Moreno again kept it competitive, but it's Davison Figueiredo that just edged those rounds out as well and beat Brandon Moreno again over another five-round decision. So I think that although these fights are always going to be competitive, they're always going to be back and forth, there's a likelihood that they're always going to be three rounds to one fighter and two rounds to another. It's just Davison Figueiredo, the hard-hitting knockout artist. You know, the judges love the aggression, the forward pressure, the big knockout shots, looking to finish the fight at all times. Brandon Moreno's probably got the slightly better volume out of the two, maybe slightly more technical as well on the feet striking. But it's actually Davison Figueiredo that's got that judge-friendly style of fighting. And the other thing to take into consideration for this fight as well, I briefly mentioned it in the introduction, the Brazilian fans are going to be going crazy. They're going to be going wild. Every time Figueiredo lands something, you're going to hear noise, which means the judges are going to hear noise. The judges are only human, and these types of things do affect fights. I think that we are going to see another close fight. I think we are going to see another back-and-forth fight. I think both fighters are going to have the moments, maybe finishing moments as well. I think it's going to be another phenomenal fight. There's a reason the UFC have booked this fight now four times in a row, but I just feel that if there's going to be a finish, it's more likely to be on Figueiredo's side, even though Moreno's never been finished. I think Figueiredo hits too hard. I think from a submission perspective, I don't see him submitting Brandon Moreno, but he's just a threat and a constant danger from a submission perspective. I'm not saying Moreno can't knock Figueiredo out. I'm just saying if there is an upside to the finish, it's more likely, in my opinion, to be on Figueiredo's side. But if the fight goes to a decision and we've got a close decision, as the saying goes, you've got to beat the champion to beat the champion. So what that basically means is Brandon Moreno will have to dominantly beat Davison Figueiredo if the judges are going to give a close decision away from the champion and take that belt away. But then when you add in that we're in Brazil, Davison Figueiredo is Brazilian, you've got the Brazilian crowd behind him as well, it's going to have to be a super dominant performance from Brandon Moreno to become the champion here. And I think it's a performance where he's going to perform well, but it isn't likely to be dominant. So in that close fight, even if it's a split decision, it's more often than not in that scenario going to be going over to Davison Figueiredo. So for those reasons, I am picking Davison Figueiredo to win this fight and still the UFC flyweight champion. And in the next fight, we've got another Brazilian. Of course, we've got Gilbert Burns versus Neil Magny. Now, Neil Magny can be a tricky fighter for most opponents. You know, he's tall, he's long, and he's got that good reach, that good frame, leg reach as well. And he's a decent striker. He can wrestle to a certain extent. Obviously, there are a lot of wrestlers in the division, at the top of the division, that, you know, would have a wrestling advantage over Magny. But for the most part, he's a good wrestler. He works in the clinch where he can really slow fights down and really drag the clock out and run the time down and do just enough so the referees aren't splitting him up. He's one of these types of fighters that, listen, he's been in the UFC for many years. He's got a lot of wins in the UFC, a lot of experience. He's fought pretty much all the best fighters over that, you know, longevity in the UFC as well, and he's a good all-round type of fighter. I just feel that Neil Magny's a little bit inconsistent with his performances, and he can look great one fight and then really shock in the next fight. I think that with Gilbert Burns, you know what you're going to get from him. He's a hard-hitting striker with this grappling jiu-jitsu background. He competes most months outside of the UFC in grappling tournaments, and he's one of these real legit BJJ black belts, and his wrestling has come on a little bit. His striking has obviously come on over the years. You know, he's got knockout power. He's going to be in Brazil, so again, he's going to have the fans behind him. You know, there's going to be a fire lit inside of him. And I feel like Neil Magny, although he's going to be competitive somewhat in this fight, I do think that Gilbert Burns, he's not going to care about Neil Magny's range. Gilbert Burns is going to rush into that boxing range, rush into the pocket, take out all that reach advantage that Neil Magny has. And if he needs to get hit once or twice to close that distance, then he'll do that, and he'll be fine doing that, and he'll be landing the big bombs on Magny. It should be forcing Magny on the back foot. Then, like I said, you've got the crowd behind Burns. Then if Burns decides to, he can then start looking at trying to take Magny down whilst Magny's on the back foot, start using his jiu-jitsu. And if this fight hits the mat, I do anticipate Gilbert Burns submitting Neil Magny and getting him out of there. I just feel that wherever this fight goes, it's not going to be one of these comfortable, slow-paced fights for Neil Magny where he can just really fight at his own pace, dictate the range. I think it's going to be Burns that's really putting that aggression and pressure on Magny, which makes Neil Magny then a completely different fighter. So for those reasons, I'm picking Gilbert Burns to win this fight. And in the next fight, another Brazilian powerhouse, we've got Jessica Andrade versus Lauren Murphy. Now, Lauren Murphy, for, you know, a long time in the UFC, especially from my perspective, she's known as a fighter that, you know, has got very fortunate, shall we say, with some decisions. I don't think she's going to be very fortunate should this fight be anywhere close, and should it, if it go to a decision as well, you know, I don't think a robbery is going to happen here. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Lauren Murphy. She's actually an improved fighter and developed over the years, but I just feel that, you know, she's got two or three wins in the UFC that she shouldn't have on her record. But, you know, that's a story for a different day. She's got Jessica Andrade in front of her, and Jessica Andrade, like I've already said, a Brazilian powerhouse. She's going to come forward, she's going to wing bombs, she's got everything, Andrade, that you'd want to see in a fighter, that you need to see in a fighter at the top level in the UFC, and everything in a fighter that you want to watch as a fan as well. She's small, she's got that bullish pressure where she'll come forward, she'll wing bombs, she doesn't mind taking a punch if it means landing a good combination herself. Everything's thrown with power, but then she's got a good wrestling game, she's got an even better jiu-jitsu game as well. I think Lauren Murphy's in for a very, very rough night, and unless Lauren Murphy just, because again, she does have some sort of power here, you know, if she does catch Andrade coming in recklessly and wobbles Andrade, you know, sometimes dropping a fighter or hurting a fighter can just change the rest of the fight. Maybe that's how Lauren Murphy wins, but outside of that, I'm struggling to see a real solid path to victory for her. I think Andrade is going to be the better striker, more efficient striker, more powerful striker. I think she's going to be the better wrestler, both offensively and defensively. And if the fight does hit the mat, I do expect Andrade to be the better grappler as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jessica Andrade to win this fight. In the next fight, this one should be a fun fight. Action-packed, we've got Paul Craig versus Johnny Walker. Now, Johnny Walker, an interesting one, because obviously, you know, he came into the UFC with a ton of hype, was knocking everybody out with these crazy low percentage strikes. Then he started going on a bit of a losing streak, and his chin is now very suspect. I still think it's suspect. He even tried changing as a fighter, so he's not this explosive knockout guy. He tries to be a little bit more patient, just so he's not putting himself in too much danger. Maybe turning into a point scoring style, but again, that worked only for a short period of time. I think Johnny Walker's best where he is aggressive and explosive. But what's interesting with Walker is he's been working a lot with John Kavanagh, obviously Conor McGregor's coach now. John Kavanagh's a high-level jiu-jitsu coach, and Johnny Walker seems to be learning very quickly from him. And I've got a funny feeling that where Paul Craig's path to victory here is to submit Johnny Walker now. Does Craig take Walker down, wrestle him down? I think that Walker's strong enough and his wrestling defense is good enough to be able to cope with Paul Craig's offensive wrestling. I don't think Johnny Walker's takedown defense is bad. I don't think Paul Craig's takedown offense is necessarily at a beast level, but I just think that Walker's going to be good enough to keep the fight upright from offensive wrestling. So then Paul Craig's path to victory, maybe pull guard on Johnny Walker and submit him from bottom, and that's a possibility. But I do think that the work that Walker's been putting in with the jiu-jitsu is probably enough to make him safe in this fight, and he's not going to cause Paul Craig any problems. Not that I anticipate he's going to cause him problems on the mat from an offensive jiu-jitsu perspective, but defensively, I think Walker's going to be able to do enough to stay out of the way of these arm bars, these triangles, if Craig does pull guard. And then on the feet, I think Johnny Walker's explosive nature, these flying knees, the elbows, the crazy strikes, I think is going to be enough to catch Paul Craig. Again, Paul Craig's a decent striker, but I think Paul Craig trying to be really fundamental and sit down on the jabs and the straight 1-2s down the middle, while Johnny Walker's going absolutely nuts with the explosive striking and trying to close the distance and land the elbows and knees inside of that close quarter range, I think Paul Craig's going to come stuck on the feet. So I ultimately think Johnny Walker's going to be able to remain safe from Paul Craig's biggest path to victory here. And then in turn, I think Johnny Walker's going to have a striking advantage. So I do favour Johnny Walker in this fight. For those reasons, I'm picking Johnny Walker to win this fight. And in the next fight, you know, this is going to be a sad fight for a lot of MMA fans, because we've got an absolute legend of the sport, a veteran in the game, a fighter that's been in this sport for so many years and a true pioneer of not only Brazilian MMA, but, you know, MMA in general as well. For one last time, we've got Mauricio Shogun Rua, and he's fighting Iho Potiara. And it's a real tough fight, I think, for Shogun Rua. You know, for the most part, I think a lot of people thought that Shogun was, you know, declined to a point where he's not going to be competitive anymore. But you look at, you know, his last fight against OSP, he was competitive. He lost the decision, but it was a competitive fight. And I think there's ways for him to beat Iho Potiara here. The problem is he's going to have to weather a storm if he's going to beat Potiara. Now, personally, I'm not massively high on Potiara as a fighter. Like, he does have some qualities and obviously he's going to win fights in the UFC, but I think that his ceiling isn't too high. I think unless he develops and improves as a fighter, I'm not sure how far he actually goes or if he goes that far at all. But the one thing that he does have, and especially in this fight that matters, is he's got that youthful energy, he's got that aggression, he's got that power. The problem is the cardio is a little bit suspect. So this is what I'm saying. If Shogun can really weather a storm from Potiara and get Potiara tired, like he did against Negomeriano, then I think that Shogun has got every chance of being able to take over this fight late, because this is a guy that isn't going to tire no matter how much he's beaten up from the early moments in this fight. If he doesn't get knocked out and Potiara tires, Shogun will take over, you know, no problem at all. The issue is, I just don't think that Shogun's going to be able to weather that storm, because Potiara is dangerous early on. Regardless of what you think of him as a fighter, he's got power, he's got aggression, he's got forward pressure, he throws in high numbers, combinations, and I think Shogun's going to be in one of these fights where he's appreciating that he's got to weather a storm and Potiara is just laying it on him and Shogun's covering up, and maybe the referee stops the fight via TKO, via a stand-up rather than waiting for Shogun to get knocked out. Maybe he just does get knocked out and the referee stops it. I just feel that, you know, Shogun's got to weather a storm here, like I've said a couple of times, a storm that it really pains me to break a fight down like this, especially with it being Shogun's last fight. But I can't look past what what I'm seeing, and I do think that the, like I said, the youthful energy, the aggression, the pressure, the power, the combinations, the fact that he just unloads and throws the kitchen sink at his opponents, I'm just not sure Shogun's able to withstand that. I hope he does, and I hope he weathers that storm, comes through and, you know, walks away into the sunset with a win on his record in his last fight. But I'm just trying to be realistic here. So for those reasons, I am unfortunately siding, and it's no disrespect to Potiera, but I am unfortunately siding with Iho Potiera to win this fight. And next up, we've got two Brazilians. We've got Gregory Rodriguez versus Bruno Fajeda. Now, this is only two Brazilians because it's supposed to have been Gregory Rodriguez versus Brad Tavares, which is a fight I was actually really looking forward to. I think it was a good matchup. Obviously, Brad Tavares now out of the fight. Bruno Fajeda steps up in short notice. Bruno Fajeda's got experience on Dana White's Contender Series, so that's obviously where he's been in the list of the call-ups for this event. And I think it's a fight, in all honesty. Gregory Rodriguez really needs to be careful and, you know, especially, again, early on in this fight, just needs to mind his P's and Q's. Bruno Fajeda's going to be shorter. He's going to be stockier. So that means he's going to have to be bullying into the range of Rodriguez to land on him. So Rodriguez, from a defensive striking perspective, has definitely got to be careful. We have seen Rodriguez clipped and hurt and knocked out before. Well, admittedly, I do think that was maybe a bit of an anomaly fight, but again, we've seen it, you can't ignore it. So Rodriguez is definitely going to have to be very mindful here, but I do think Gregory Rodriguez, as a quality of a fighter goes, I think is much greater than Bruno Fajeda. Even from a striking perspective, I think Rodriguez is nice and tight with his defense. His boxing's good. He's got good power. But then his ability to really mix in the wrestling and get the fight down to the mat so he can get his grappling going, where he is a world champion in BJJ and he's a black belt in BJJ. He's got a lot of credentials, a solid submission game. So I think the fact that fighters know how good he is on the mat can make them a little hesitant on the feet, just because if his opponents overextend or overexert themselves, then Rodriguez is going to be in a position where he might be able to take them down. So I think Bruno Fajeda's got that knockout chance, maybe a bit of an exaggerated knockout chance in this fight, just because he does hit hard and he is going to have to be very aggressive and quick into range. So maybe he does have that extra little bit of a puncher's chance. But when you're looking at, like I said, as a quality of a fight, and a quality of a fighter that Gregory Rodriguez is over his opponent, I think that he is the slightly better striker from a technical perspective, but then there's a massive gap in skill in the jiu-jitsu, and I think that's where Rodriguez is really going to flourish in this fight, the fact that he's got multiple ways to win as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Gregory Rodriguez to win this fight. And in the next fight, again, two Brazilians again, and also because one fighter is making the short notice UFC debut. We've got Thiago Moises versus Melk Costa. Melk Costa obviously being the fighter that's making his UFC debut, stepping in on short notice. And it's actually an interesting signing from the UFC, because Melk Costa is a no-nonsense type of fighter. He's aggressive, his striking's good, he'll come forwards, he'll look to land bombs, he'll switch stances, he's very awkward in the way that he fights, and it can be a problem for his opponents. And I do think that Costa's going to get a number of wins in the UFC, and I think with developments as well, Costa could become a really good fighter in the division. But right now we're focusing on Thiago Moises in front of him, and I think it's probably just maybe one or two fights too soon. Again, similar to what I said with Jamal Hill, obviously in different circumstances there, but maybe a couple of fights too soon for Melk Costa in regards to this level of opponent. But he's taken the opportunity to sign with the UFC on short notice, and in all honesty, you know, it's not one of those fights where you sat there thinking, ah, yeah, Costa can't win this fight. You know, if Costa does end up winning, I'm not going to be surprised. It's just with Thiago Moises, I think he's experienced enough now. He's fought some good fighters in the UFC, and he's taken the losses that he needs to take as well. He fights it out of a great gym. He's got great training partners, and he's a good all-round type of fighter. He's got good striking, boxing, kicking, and then in regards to his grappling, he's got a good grappling game as well. So I think, again, Thiago Moises got to mind his P's and Q's for sure, because Costa is young, he's, you know, developing, he's aggressive and he's explosive, and Costa's got nothing to lose in this fight. So, you know, from Costa's perspective, he can come forwards and he can just do what he needs to do, make things exciting, make fans fall in love with him. And even if he loses and the fans still remember the fight because of how wild he was, then that's great. But the thing is, because he might have that mentality that's where Moises has got to be careful. Moises does have something to lose. He is the fighter that's being expected to win here. So he's got to, like I've already said, just mind his P's and Q's. But I think he gets there. I think his striking from a fundamental technical perspective is probably going to be able to be enough to nullify anything wild that Costa's throwing. And then when Costa's changing stances, I think that's going to leave entries into potential takedowns for Moises. Once Moises is down to the map, I think he's a better quality grappler. So again, experience, being a UFC veteran at this point, and just having been that fighter that's in Costa's position and developed over the years, I think Moises should win this fight. So I'm picking Thiago Moises to win this fight. And in the next fight, this fight's an exciting one, and we welcome one half of the Bonfim brothers. The Bonfim brothers are two brothers that we have been anticipating making the UFC debuts for quite a while now, especially the hardcore fan base know all about these guys. And in this fight, we've got Gabriel Bonfim versus Munir Lazez. Now, both Bonfim brothers are solid, like I've just said. You know, the UFC debuts have been highly anticipated. Gabriel's brother does fight on this card, so that breakdown will be very shortly. But Gabriel Bonfim is regarded by most of the hardcore fan base as being the better of the two brothers. And that's, again, that's no disrespect to Ismael Bonfim. But again, Gabriel Bonfim is that fighter that everyone is really excited for, slightly higher ceiling in a lot of people's eyes. But this is a good fight that he's got against Munir Lazez. Munir Lazez is predominantly a striker, so it's going to be a striking affair. And this is where it gets a bit confusing with Gabriel Bonfim, because his background, or his style, shall I say, is definitely boxing. You know, he's got fast hands, clean, sharp, crisp, powerful throws in combinations. It does really leave you in awe when you're watching him strike and when you're watching him box. He's got a professional boxing record as well. But he's actually got 10 submission wins out of his 13 total wins as a fighter, as a professional fighter, via submission. So this is where it gets confusing. But what it does mean is Bonfim is an all-round type of fighter. He is very well-rounded. And if the fight does hit the mat, he's going to be comfortable. Now, with Munir Lazez, where Gabriel Bonfim's got to be careful is with this kicking game of Lazez, because Lazez is a heavy kicker, predominantly prefers to kick opposed to, or over really, is boxing. But where Bonfim has got some deficiency, in my opinion, is within that striking defense. He does get hit a little bit more than you'd like to see. His fight outside, last fight outside of the UFC, he was dropped, he was rocked, he was hurt, just because he is, within his combinations, leaves himself a little bit open to be hit. So if his opponents are going punch with him and are finding some success for themselves inside these striking exchanges, then that's where Bonfim can be caught. So he's got to be very careful of Lazez. Like I say, Lazez fires these kicks out fast, but I kind of feel stylistically Bonfim's going to have a lot of success in this fight himself, because with Lazez's kicking, you can't really throw kicks in combinations unless you are someone like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. But even still, at this level in the UFC, it's very difficult. So the kicks are likely going to be singular kicks, and I think that Bonfim's boxing, once he starts being able to get his reads down and closing the distance, I think he's going to be able to counter the kicks of Lazez and really start getting onto his boxing and putting it on Lazez. I think Lazez is actually a really good fight for Bonfim for a UFC debut, just because it's going to bring out the best of Bonfim, in my opinion. Lazez isn't going to roll over, although we have seen that before against Wally Alves. I don't think Lazez is going to roll over. I think it's going to be a good back and forth contest, but one that Bonfim just starts pulling away with the longer the fight goes on. And like I said, once he really starts getting his hands going and rips combinations at Lazez, gets Lazez moving backwards, I think that Bonfim's going to, like I said, he's got an opponent here that's going to bring out the best in him. However, the one concern is bringing out the best of an opponent, because your opponent is doing good work, is going to leave Bonfim in a position where he is going to get hit. Lazez is going to land hard punches as well and good elbows, and there is going to be that chance that Bonfim maybe gets hurt again, maybe gets dropped again. You know, so Bonfim does have to be really careful. The other thing to quickly mention, in that fight where he was hurt and dropped, he managed to recover, he managed to get back up, he managed to go into another round, and then he finished his opponent as well. So, you know, there's a lot to be said in regards to somebody's status, mental status, the recoverability after being dropped, for them to stand back up, continue with the game plan, and then finish their opponent in the next round, I think is quite impressive. Listen, I'm looking forward to Gabriel Bonfim. I'm really looking forward to this fight as well. I think, like I say, stylistically, they're both going to be able to put on a good show, a good performance. But I think Bonfim should be the better fighter here. I think his style should be able to overlap what Lezez is going to do inside the cage and Lezez's style. So for those reasons, I'm picking Gabriel Bonfim to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got the Brazilian phenom Jairton Almeida versus Shamil Abdurakhimov. Now, this fight has been booked a few times and, you know, credit where credit's due, because not many fighters are putting their hands up to fight Almeida, and Shamil Abdurakhimov did have an out with him being hurt and with him pulling via injury or illness or whatever it was. So for the fact that he's come back in to fight Jairton Almeida after already having that out against him, like I said, you know, he's clearly a fighter's fighter. And I do think he's in a really tough spot, Abdurakhimov. I think Jairton Almeida, he's, even though he's going to give up a lot of size to Abdurakhimov, I think this is really working for Jairton Almeida, because he's fighting in the heavyweight division where, in my opinion, he's clearly a light heavyweight fighter. He's not cutting any weight, so he's doing everything the correct way from a health perspective, but he's got the power and the strength of a heavyweight without having the weight of a heavyweight, and it's working perfectly for Almeida. And I'm just curious to how long it takes before Almeida is really being talked about as a fighter who could be a UFC champion, who is on the brink of a UFC championship fight, because he's an absolute beast, and I swear not many fighters in this division are going to beat Jairton Almeida. So it's honestly, it begs the question of when is he going to start fighting the Curtis Blades? When is he going to start fighting the Sergey Pavlovichs? When is he going to start fighting Miocic, John Jones, Cyril Gane? When is he going to be in the mix with those guys? Because it's got to be sometime soon. And I think he makes another statement against Shamil Abdurakhimov on Saturday night. Now, Almeida's striking is probably the one area that, well, not probably, is the one area that definitely needs work. You know, he's not a bad striker. He does put things together okay, but he could be a little bit more fluid and more fluent on the feet, more efficient, mix things up a little bit quicker. But for the most part, he's just wanting to get all of his opponents, take him down and start grappling with him. He's a world-class BJJ black belt, and he does things that other black belts don't do. And you see certain position changes, transitions that are just absolutely high level. And I think that Abdurakhimov is going to come into this fight, I think he's going to be hesitant. I think Almeida's going to be able to get away on some heavy head kicks, which he likes to land, to back his opponents up so he can get a hold of them and take them down. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think Almeida gets Abdurakhimov down. Once he gets him down, he rolls all over him, and he'll either finish via ground and pound or via submission. What round? I'm not sure. Maybe Almeida just takes it easy for the first round, wears Abdurakhimov out so he can guarantee himself a finish in round two, the following round, or, you know, maybe does that twice and guarantees a finish late by tiring Abdurakhimov out. But ultimately, I don't see the fight going to a decision. I do see Almeida finishing the fight. I'm not sure whether it's going to be ground and pound, not sure whether it's going to be a submission, but it'll be one of the two. I'm picking Jairton Almeida to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is going to be an amazing fight, in my opinion. Also very intriguing as well. Also, we welcome the second half of the Bonfim brothers. We've got Terence McKinney versus Ismael Bonfim. Now, it tells you exactly where Ismael Bonfim is at for his UFC debut, to be against Terence McKinney, who is a fighter that, you know, fair enough, he lost against Drew Dober, and, you know, a lot of people kind of did expect that big step up in competition for that to happen. But for the most part, man, Terence McKinney is a killer. So the fact that the UFC have matched Ismael Bonfim's UFC debut with Terence McKinney, and the betting lines are relatively close as well, roughly around a pick'em, I think Bonfim may have drifted slightly out to be a very slight underdog in this fight. But like I said, Terence McKinney is the type of fighter, at the minute you fight a UFC debut, he's going to be minus 250, minus 300. So, you know, it tells you everything you need to know about where Ismael Bonfim's at, where the UFC see him, where the public see him, where the bookies see him. And in regards to Bonfim's style, again, quite a heavy boxer, but this time, you know, from where I spoke about Gabriel Bonfim and him having a lot of submissions on his record, Ismael Bonfim is a raw boxer, a very good boxer, also has a professional boxing record as well. Ismael Bonfim as well, he's also the slightly older Bonfim brother. He's also got the better record, more experience, 18-3. So again, from Terence McKinney's perspective, he's fighting a seasoned veteran in MMA. And although it's his UFC debut, he's still been beating some solid guys outside of the UFC. Bonfim's boxing is less finishing less from a finishing perspective, more from a technical perspective, and he rips to the body beautifully as well. Good left hooks to the body, targets the head, targets the body, keeps his opponents guessing. The problem that I think Bonfim's going to have in this fight, though, is when Bonfim's fighting, he's normally the fighter that dictates the pace of the fight, which means that he can dictate the range, which means that he can get his striking going, be technical, really put it on his opponent, make his opponent shoot takedowns. He's got good takedown defense as well. But in this fight against Terence McKinney, especially early on, he's not going to have the luxury of dictating that pace, because we know how McKinney fights, man. He comes forward, he's aggressive, he's fast, he gets in the face of his opponents, he's throwing 1-2s, he's throwing head kicks, he's switching stances. Then you don't know whether he's going to mix in a takedown as well, just to throw you completely off your game. And he will not let off the gas early in this fight, and this is where I'm concerned for Ismael Bonfim, because Bonfim's used to being able to control fights himself, like I've said, dictate the pace, dictate the range, but he's not going to have that against Terence McKinney. Now, where Bonfim does win is if he weathers a storm, or if McKinney actually doesn't come out hard and just goes to wrestle. McKinney's got a wrestling background, his jiu-jitsu's good as well. Now, like I said, Bonfim's already got good defensive wrestling, but, you know, against Terence McKinney, you can't rule out McKinney being able to get takedowns. And once he's on the mat, he's actually got real good topside jiu-jitsu. And again, Bonfim's going to be very comfortable in the world of jiu-jitsu as well, but it just makes this fight very close, and you do start to understand why the betting lines are this close in this fight. Now, where Bonfim actually wins this fight is if McKinney comes out fast, hard, tires himself out, exactly what happened in the Dober fight. You know, I think he's going to drop and hurt Bonfim early in this fight. Does Bonfim recover? If he does and McKinney tires, then Bonfim will take over late in the fight, maybe even finish a tired McKinney as well. But I just feel that McKinney is going to be making improvements in his game, and we're not going to see that crazy McKinney in every single fight, because he's going to look back at that Dober fight and know why he lost that fight. He lost the fight because he threw everything at Dober trying to finish him, get him out of there, couldn't get him out of there, and then ultimately tired and lost himself and crumbled. So how many times are we going to see that version of McKinney? You know, there's only so many times that can happen before you really start making, you know, adjustments to your game. I think that Terence McKinney is maybe a fight too early for Bonfim here. I think the UFC have matched this fight well, but I don't think they've matched it in absolute favour of Bonfim. I think they could have given Ismael Bonfim a much better fight for him to really showcase his skills, and that's where the problem is. I don't think against McKinney he's going to have many options, especially early on, to showcase the skills. I think McKinney is going to be relentless early on with the pressure and aggression, and then when you start mixing in takedowns, I think that McKinney could fight a smart fight here and use that aggression and pressure to really concern Bonfim, set him on the back foot where he's normally on the front foot, and really just take him out of his comfort zone. So for those reasons, I'm picking Terence McKinney to win this fight. And talking of good matchups, fighters fighting each other at the right time, we've got Wally Alves versus Nicholas Dalby, and like I say, I think it's a well-matched fight. I don't think either fighter have really got championship opportunities here, but I think both fighters have still got a lot to offer in the UFC, and they're both definitely UFC caliber fighters. I think if these guys fought 10 times, it could be, you know, a coin flip each time. And the betting line, you know, Wally Alves did open as an underdog, it's now flipped, he's a very slight favorite. You know, I do kind of agree with that trend, and I also agree that the line should be close. I think from a striking perspective, it's very close. I'll probably give Nicholas Dalby the fundamental technical advantage from a striking perspective, but when it comes to aggression and pressure, Wally Alves is going to be there absolutely, and he's going to be, again, he's going to have that Brazilian crowd behind him, it's going to light a fire in him, and he's going to be able to really feed off that energy that the crowd are going to be delivering and move forwards on Dalby. Then you look at the wrestling, the grappling, I think that's pretty close between both fighters. I actually think if anybody's going to look to wrestle in this fight, it's more likely going to be Dalby, but again, Wally Alves, he's got a good guillotine. You've got to be really careful shooting on him. Still, you know, we go back to that Colby Covington fight where Colby lost against Wally Alves via guillotine. So, you know, if Dalby does come to wrestle, he's got to be careful. I'm not sure he will. But then if the fight goes to the mat from a jiu-jitsu perspective, again, both fighters are very capable on the mat as well. As I've already mentioned a few times now, it's a very well-matched fight. But when you are looking at a winner in this fight, I do think, like I've said, the Brazilian and Alves being in Brazil, having the Brazilian crowd behind him, that energy that they'll allow their fighters to thrive on. If the fight does go to a decision and it's close, it's more likely going to be favoured in the side of the Brazilian, which is Alves. But then Alves does have a judge-friendly style. You know, he's got big punches, looks to knock his opponents out, looks to be aggressive. So not only do the judges like seeing that, but that type of fight also gives a slight finishing upside on Alves as well. So I think Dalby is going to be competitive for the most part, but ultimately when you are looking at a winner, I do think Alves has got the more upside in winning, whether that be a finish or a decision. So for those reasons, I'm picking Wally Alves to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Josiane Nunes versus Zara Fearn. And Zara Fearn, tall, long, striker, you know, likes to use front kicks, likes to use the reach on the legs as well, especially. She's, like I said, she's going to be long. She's going to be, well, she's going to have a big advantage over Nunes in regards to the size, the length, her frame. And like I said, with the punches coming out straight, it's going to allow her to be able to land on Nunes. However, the problem is, just like we speak about somebody like Jessica Andrade, who's, as I've already broken down on this card, Josiane Nunes is this small fighter that's very bullish, that will come forwards, that will eat punches if it means landing three or four herself, and she'll consistently come forward. She's got good durability. So although you never really want to rely on your durability in the UFC, her opponents more often than not don't have that super hard knockout shot, so she's able to walk through the punches. And then once she's in close range, she reminds me a lot of a female version of John Lineker, you know, in regards to rip into the body, rip into the head, and just being an absolutely aggressive bull inside the cage. And I think that Zara Fearn's gonna have a big job on her hands here to be able to get a hand raised at the end of the night. And I don't think she does. I think that Nunes is, like I said, is going to be able to close the distance aggressively. I think she's going to be able to walk through the shots that Zara Fearn's landing. I think she's going to be ripping to the body, to the head. I think from a finishing upside, Nunes is absolutely the more likely fighter to finish. Then she's Brazilian, so she's going to have the Brazilian crowd on her side as well. And then that's going to make her thrive a little bit more inside the cage and give her that urgency. So if she doesn't get Zara Fearn out of there and it goes to a judge's scorecard, I think that the judges are going to love the way Nunes is fighting. I think that Nunes is going to land a ton of volume, hard shots as well, and just look the dominant fighter for as long as this fight lasts. So for those reasons, I'm picking Josiane Nunes to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got newcomer Luan Lacerda versus Cody Stamann. And I think that Luan Lacerda's got a difficult fight here, a difficult UFC debut. He kind of does tell you where they think that Lacerda's at, though, in regards to his quality, because, you know, a lot of fighters work towards a fighter like Cody Stamann. Luan Lacerda's been booked against Cody Stamann. So with Luan Lacerda, he's a high-level grappler. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. You see on the regional scene outside of the UFC that he's wearing very similar shorts to what BJ Penn used to wear, actually, you know, the white shorts with the black belt graphic on it. And, you know, it's very clear and very obvious where Lacerda's best. Now, in regards to his striking, he was talking about improving his striking, and I just haven't seen that yet. And I think that where Lacerda's going to come up short in this fight is from the wrestling and striking perspective, because I think that Lacerda's going to start, well, obviously all fights start standing, so I think he's going to try his luck against Cody Stamann striking. But Cody Stamann's a really good boxer. He's a UFC vet. He's been in there with much better strikers and beaten much better strikers than Lacerda. So I think that Cody Stamann's going to have no issues whatsoever from a striking perspective, unless he does just get caught with like a big overhand bomb or something, which, again, you know, we haven't really seen Cody Stamann have any issues from a durability perspective. So I think that Stamann's going to really be able to put his boxing together, use low kicks, slow Lacerda down, and really start putting it on him, which means Lacerda's likely going to start shooting for takedowns. But then Cody Stamann's a good wrestler, so I don't think Stamann is going to go out there and actively wrestle, at least not too hard. But from a defensive perspective, I think that his defensive wrestling is going to be better than the offensive wrestling of Lacerda. The only other thing that I can think of is if they're in a clinch scenario and Lacerda makes his way around the back and jumps on the back of Stamann and tries to choke him, maybe that's an option for him. But for the most part, I just think that Stamann's going to have the better striking. I think he's going to have the better wrestling, both offensively and defensively. I think even if he does want to take Lacerda down, Cody Stamann's defensive jiu-jitsu isn't at a level where someone like Lacerda is just going to armbar him or triangle him off his back. You know, you can never say never, I suppose, but I'd be very surprised. I think Cody Stamann's got the beating of Lacerda wherever this fight goes, unless Lacerda does manage to get on top and keep Stamann down. But again, that's going to be difficult to do, and it's something that we haven't seen many fighters, if any fighter in the UFC or outside the UFC, do that. So, Yeah, I think it's a tough debut. It's a tough fight for Lozada. Maybe he does get some wins in the UFC after this, but I think Stamen is a level above. You know, it is one of these fights where you have to remind yourself there's levels in MMA. And I think that's the case. I'm picking Cody Stamen to win this fight. And the last fight to break down on this card, we've got newcomer Daniel Marcos versus Simon Oliveira. And this should be a good striking affair. I think if there is any wrestling or grappling, it's more likely to come from Simon Oliveira, who does have a lot of submission wins on his record. But even though he's got a lot of submissions on his record, I think his wrestling, his offensive wrestling, is that typical type of grappler that's really frustrating, that's got good grappling, and the wrestling's still yet to be desired. Now, against a certain level of opponent, Simon Oliveira will be able to take them down. However, with Daniel Marcos, he is a raw striker. And when I say raw, I don't mean green. I just mean he's a pure striker. And he's dangerous. He's got good length on his strikes. He fires down the middle, but he'll also mix in hooks. He's got a dangerous low kick as well. So you tend to find that a lot of fighters, or I've seen a lot of opponents shoot on Daniel Marcos and try and take him down. One or two have managed to get him down, but it's very difficult to take him down. And when you have taken Marcos down, he's straight away trying to get back up to his feet. He's got urgency. He doesn't just lay flat on his back and, you know, accept that, you know, he's in a bad position and he's given up that bad position. Marcos will fight to get back onto his feet. And he's also a really tall fighter for the division. He's going to be tall. He's going to be long. Simon Oliveira has also got that Muay Thai background. You can see that in his game. He's not that erratic mover. So I think that Oliveira and Marcos on the feet is going to be exciting, but I kind of feel Marcos is going to start coming up on top with the exchanges because, like I say, he's that little bit longer. He uses his kicks really well, mixes them well with his punches as well. He's aggressive. He can fight moving backwards if he needs to. He's got decent takedown defense. So Simon Oliveira, I think, has got a bit of a job on his hands here. Now, what's going to be behind him and potentially help him a lot in this fight? Again, I've said it a million times, I promise you, it does matter in these types of scenarios. Simon Oliveira is Brazilian and he's in Brazil. So again, the energy from the crowd, the roaring, if it goes to a decision and it's relatively close, it might side over with Simon Oliveira. But when I'm looking at the quality of the fighters, I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. I think it's going to be a close fight. I think it's going to be back and forth. I think both fighters are going to have the moments. But I just like the toughness and the get-go of Marcos in regards to, you know, just keeping going, even if things aren't going his way. He's moving forwards. He's just trusting his process, throwing strikes out there, mixing things up to the legs, to the body, to the head. I think that the way Simon Oliveira really makes this fight dominant, if he should be a dominant win for him, is if he takes Marcos down and settles him down. But I think Marcos is going to be much more difficult to take down than maybe Oliveira thinks. Like I said, I think it's going to be a close fight, but I'm actually going to be siding with Daniel Marcos here. I think Marcos, like I said, taller, longer striker. If his wrestling defense is up to scratch, I think he should do well in this fight. So I'm picking Daniel Marcos to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. It's been a little bit longer than usual, but obviously we've had 15 fights to break down, and I wanted to give some light to, obviously, the main event, the co-main event, because the phenomenal fights, but also to the Bonfim brothers as well, because I'm excited about both of their UFC debuts. And yeah, it's been a podcast where, you know, I've enjoyed breaking the fights down and just wanted to shine that light. Also shine the light on Jairton Almeida as well, because I think he's a fighter that is going to be up there, you know, in the coming, within this year, 12 to 18 months, I think he's going to be spoken about towards the top of the heavyweight division, maybe for a title fight as well. So, like I said, I just wanted to put shine in specific areas, but I hope you all enjoyed it. Again, if you're on a platform that allows for comments, drop a comment in, tell me who you're predicting, tell me who you think's going to win. If you don't agree with me with some fights, tell me what fights you don't agree with. Tell me who you're betting on. If you are betting, I hope you crush the bookies. And that's all for this week. I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.